Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman, brought to you by globalresearch.ca. And we have Russ Baker back again today. For those who missed the program yesterday, we had part one. This is part two. Part one is easily accessible through Republic Broadcasting's archives. So if you missed it, absolutely go back and listen. We're talking about Russ's important new book. It's titled Family of Secrets. It's brand new out this year. Family of Secrets, the Bush Dynasty, the powerful forces that put it in the White House, and what their influence means for America. And for those who missed yesterday's program, Russ Baker describes himself as an old-fashioned muckraking journalist, bringing the best of mainstream methods to the alternative media and the best of the alternative media to the mainstream. In 2005, he founded Who, What, Why, the Real News Project, that produces groundbreaking, transformative, independent, investigative journalism. And he's got his book. Oh, it is a sweeping, revealing, detailed account in nearly 600 pages of money and power. And we're going to get into part two today. We left off yesterday at a major juncture, so I'm eager to get into it today. Russ, welcome back. Russ, are you on?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Oh, I can hear you fine. I can hear you fine. We left off yesterday at Watergate, which is a story much different than the way it's been portrayed and the way most people believe it to be. So I'll let you take over and begin when we have the first break. We'll take it and then come back and pick it up again. Go ahead, Russ.
Okay, sure. Well, as we were discussing yesterday, in my 5 years of research for Family of Secrets, I was astounded to discover that George W. Bush, his father, the whole Klan, and in fact, quite a bit of American history the last 50 years was not the way that I understood it. And I thought, boy, if I'm a political investigative reporter of 20 years experience and I don't know any of these things, certainly nobody else is going to know any of this. This is really transformative information. And yesterday we discussed new information about the Kennedy assassination, the seeming involvement of elements of the intelligence services, the peculiar synchronicity of George H.W. Bush with those events, four chapters in Family of Secrets just on that. And that's where we left off. And I was explaining to you how what I had become interested in was the strange trajectory of George W. Bush to the presidency made possible by the previous trajectory of his father. And as I went back and looked at books, I found very little on the father in any substantive way, really explaining why somebody who didn't come across as a great leader or charismatic figure or visionary or much of anything had risen so quickly to the top. And so what I began focusing on was that up until the point at which George H.W. Bush, we'll call him Poppy, we'll distinguish him that way. Poppy was the nickname within the family for the father and the son, W. So we'll call him Poppy. It'll be a little easier for your listeners. So Poppy was purportedly an oil man, ran for House of Representatives in 1966. And as I noted earlier, much of his activities appeared to be cover for intelligence work throughout his adult life, and that takes us up.
Russ, let's take a break now. That they'll break away for commercial. We'll do that, and we'll pick it up. Absolutely, intelligence is a theme throughout your book.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to the News Hour, on with Russ Baker, talking about his book, Family of Secrets. Russ, let me let you pick it up. The story is long, detailed, and crucially important, and your book is just crammed with information that I guarantee most listeners don't have any idea in the world about. You taught me stuff. You're an investigative journalist, Russ. I am not, but I've been writing on, oh, cutting-edge topics for the past 4 years. And so much in your book, I had little hints here and there, but I didn't know this stuff either. So we both know that the great majority of people in the country have no idea in the world about the important thing you wrote about in your book. But continue, Russ, with the story.
Sure. And what I was saying was that there was this what I discovered in my 5 years of research, more than 500 interviews, looking at thousands of documents, was that George H.W. Bush, Poppy Bush, had a sort of a secret life, that he appeared to have been involved with intelligence work as some sort of a professional intelligence officer for his entire adult life, long before he was named as a purportedly civilian director of the Central Intelligence Agency. And yesterday we went through the events of November 22, 1963, why Poppy Bush claimed that he could not remember where he was, some of the information about where he was, and the fascinating connections between him and key figures in Dallas and around Dallas related to those events. Four chapters in Family of Secrets on that, almost all new information. Now, once I got past that, I then saw his trajectory in 1968 as a freshman congressman. Richard Nixon put him on a short list of potential vice presidential candidates, and I was sort of shocked by that because of his having so little experience, seemingly so little appeal, and so little visibility in the country at that time. And I note in Family of Secrets all this letter-writing campaign going on by these powerful corporations pushing Nixon to put Poppy Bush on the ticket. And then we see that in 1970, Poppy Bush runs for the U.S. Senate a second time unsuccessfully from Texas. Nixon then appoints him to be the ambassador to the United Nations. Now, this is something that, again, comes as a shock because he has no background or qualifications for the position. After that, in 1973, at the height of the Watergate scandal, Nixon basically shedding most of his cabinet after his reelection, and not only keeps Poppy Bush, but promotes him again and makes him the chairman of the Republican Party. And so I'm fascinated by all this, because what will happen next is, after Nixon leaves office, Bush will then be named the head of the CIA and then go on to become vice president and president. And I say, well, this is such an interesting rise. And I wanted to know more about why Nixon would promote Poppy Bush. What I discovered was yet another thing that just blew my mind, and this was that Richard Nixon basically had a secret debt to the Bush family. This is not in any of the biographies of Richard Nixon. It's not in any of the books that deal with Poppy Bush. When Richard Nixon first ran for Congress in the 1940s, he was drafted by not these sort of so much these small town businessmen as in the traditional accounts, but by a group of Wall Street bankers that wanted to get rid of a guy named Jerry Voorhees, a congressman from California, who was not particularly, now he's sort of painted as having been thought of as sort of very, very liberal, but he really wasn't so liberal. He was a very thoughtful man, and his real claim to fame back in those days was that he was the leading voice on Capitol Hill, or certainly in the House, for investigations of all of these big industries, insurance, banking, different aspects of finance and Wall Street, and was calling for regulation and oversight of Wall Street, because remember, this is the 1940s, not long after the Great Depression. He was very, very concerned about financial products and so forth. So it's obvious this is a very timely subject now.
Russ, can I add one thing? One thing about Voorhees? Voorhees also, I would say the main reason that he was targeted, everything that you said is so, I think the main reason that he was targeted was he knew that the Federal Reserve is not a government agency. It's a privately owned banking cartel, and he wanted to do something about it, just like previous congressmen did. He was a dangerous guy because of that, the idea of ending, letting the government control its own money, which it did not then, it does not now. So he was targeted, as you say, and Richard Nixon was the guy put up against him, and he was vilified as a communist and so on and so forth. But please continue.
Sure. Well, that's an excellent point. Very, very relevant. And so, as I describe in Family of Secrets, we actually have Prescott Bush, the grandfather of George W. Bush, Senator Prescott Bush, and back then he was not a senator, but he was an investment banker. And we actually have him in the district at the moment that Richard Nixon is chosen. He's out there. They're buying up these defense contractors, and they're buying up a defense contractor right there in Nixon's hometown. And so anyway, they choose Nixon. And Nixon's their boy. And again, this is completely unknown, this story. Nixon's their boy, and they're very influential in actually drafting this group of financiers, drafting Dwight Eisenhower to run on the Republican ticket. The Democrats also wanted him because he really was pretty nonpartisan, nonpolitical. And then they persuaded Eisenhower against his better instincts to take Richard Nixon as his vice presidential candidate. So now Nixon's got this very rapid rise. Nixon, as vice president, involved with a lot of the covert operations management, as was Prescott Bush, Senator Prescott Bush, while Ike tended to flee off to the golf links. And so this is the 1950s and the rise of the not just the Cold War, but this particular national security establishment with this circle around the Bushes. And there's Nixon in it. And then he loses in 1960, has his comeback, and feels obligated to promote Poppy Bush. But he doesn't necessarily like him. And when Nixon becomes president, we start seeing a different Nixon emerge. He starts becoming a more complex figure. And as we now know, Richard Nixon would not, by today's standards, be considered at all a conservative president. He, and I'm sure you can cite chapter and verse on that, Steve. You know, he did all kinds of things that today would have been more commonly associated almost with a Democratic president.
Oh, they would call him a pinko today.
Yeah. And so Nixon basically began to displease the establishment. And again, in Family of Secrets, I've got several chapters, and they focus on Watergate. What I discovered, again, was the same thing I had with the Kennedy assassination, where I had never paid attention to it and thought perhaps Oswald had done it. I didn't really know, and discovered a whole new backstory on the Kennedy assassination. There again, I discovered with Watergate a whole new story. And again, we see the intelligence services, the military contractors, the oil people all becoming upset with Richard Nixon, just as they became upset with John F. Kennedy. We see Nixon trying to make his name in history. He and Kissinger with the back channel to the America's enemies, Soviet Union and China, all kinds of other things that were very much upsetting them. And we see Poppy Bush there in the catbird seat as an intelligence officer, as the head of the Republican Party, and a number of covert operations preceding the Watergate burglary itself. And all of these that I describe in Family of Secrets appear to be targeted not on behalf of Nixon, no evidence he knew about them, but things that were going to harm him. Some were financial, some were other things, some were political, and none of those things ever caught fire. And then we see the burglary being run by CIA-connected figures, where they deliberately put the tape on the doors in such a way that the security guard finds it. The burglars are given certain things that lead right back to the committee to reelect the president in the White House. And I conclude in my reporting that what Watergate was it was a covert operation, essentially a peaceful coup d'etat to remove Richard Nixon, that Poppy Bush appears to have had some kind of involvement again with this thing, just as he seems to have had some kind of awareness of an operation against John F. Kennedy. And your listeners can decide for themselves. I've got 1,000 footnotes in there. The book is very, very transparent on how I came upon this information.
Well, Russ, the whole Watergate affair just had an aroma to it when it happened. The burglary did seem very, very strange. Why do a burglary in the first place? If you want to get some information, a much easier way to do it, Russ, is just infiltrate. It's very easy to get your guy on the inside. My goodness, the FBI has done it for decades. When they want to target a group, they simply infiltrate it. They get somebody to join. They look like somebody who belongs inside that group, and they pick up whatever information that they want to get. So if they wanted to get some information about the Democrat campaign or whatever, just get some people on the inside and find it out. But I don't know why they'd even want to bother doing that in the first place. You can design a political campaign any way that you want to do it. So the whole thing had an aroma to it. Explain the role of John Dean, Russ.
You know, one of the things that struck me, as I keep in mind again, here I set out to write a book trying to explain how an improbable figure like George W. Bush could rise to the top, become the most powerful person in the world, and institute a whole series of enormously radical initiatives that sort of turn the world upside down, turn the country upside down. And that's really what I set out to do. I wasn't setting out to reinvent our understanding of everything, but as I started looking at this strange and peculiar family and going deeper and deeper and sort of falling down these rabbit holes, I began finding that I had to go into such detail. And so with Watergate, again, I had to understand what the mechanics of the thing were. And so I began to say, who were the key actors in this thing? They were the key figures that brought Richard Nixon down were John Dean, E. Howard Hunt, they were Bob Woodward, the Washington Post, and what I discovered was that all of these figures had intelligence connections.
Oh, interesting. How many people would think that Woodward, not Bernstein, just Woodward?
You know, Bernstein is a little bit more tricky a figure.
Let's hold that for a minute, Russ.
I focus on Woodward.
They'll break away. Let's pick up on that when we come back. We'll be right back.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour. On with Russ Baker on his book, Family of Secrets. Russ, I think one point, let's talk a little bit about Woodward and Bernstein and what they did. But one comment that I would make is that Katharine Graham ran the paper at that time, and Katharine Graham was absolutely a high-level insider. She came from a wealthy family. Of course, the Post is a dynasty unto itself. She's gone now. But she very much had a hot right ideology, and it seems to me impossible that she would target any government official that she would have wanted to support. So she had to be in on this thing, and Nixon was a target, and greater powers than him targeted him for removal, and Katharine Graham had to have been enlisted to some extent to go along with this thing. So then we get Bernstein and Woodward, and you talk about Woodward's intelligence ties.
Right. And in fact, as far as the Grahams go, Katharine Graham's father, as I note in Family of Secrets, was very close with key figures at the top of the Central Intelligence Agency. He was a friend of Prescott Bush's. In fact, in the early 1950s, when Poppy Bush started his little tiny obscure Midland, Texas oil company, Katharine Graham's father was one of the people putting a sizable chunk of money into that. That's the enterprise that, as I described, appears to have been some kind of an intelligence vehicle. So there are ties going way back between these families. Anyway, so as far as Woodward goes, it's very interesting to sort of track the stories that he did. And the conventional, the sort of the myths about the story, for example, that there was this deep throat, who gave him all of this information. As I point out in Family of Secrets, Woodward's own literary agent says there was never a deep throat, and it wasn't even Mark Felt, the one who was supposedly outed recently when conveniently he was so senile that he couldn't even speak for himself, that all of this was concocted. At a minimum, Woodward had a lot of different sources, and they created this composite for the purposes of having a good character for a movie that then involved, Robert Redford, All the President's Men. But in fact, I think that there really wasn't any source per se. There was information being provided that was damaging to Nixon, and then what they published was consistently damaging to Nixon. They didn't, the famous phrase, follow the money, but they didn't really follow the money. I try to follow the money as best as I can in Family of Secrets, and it's very clear they didn't do that. All of this information was damaging to Nixon. It was not good journalism at all, because there was no effort to look at the ridiculousness of the burglary itself. I mean, an entry-level journalist who didn't have any agenda would have immediately seen that there was something wrong with it. Nixon himself, when he first heard about the burglary, he said, "This is absurd. It's just, this thing looks like a setup. Who would do this?" You know, and that's what it was. And so there are some very serious questions about Woodward, and it's very interesting that he's continued to have access, remarkable access, to the Bush family all the way through during George W. Bush's presidency, when the New York Times for years could not get a single interview with George W. Bush. There was Bob Woodward in there all the time, and then he got all those best-selling books out of that, which all cumulatively had to shift as public opinion shifted, and his final book was something of a mea culpa about the earlier ones. But he always has had the access, and he's been a very important figure right at the crossroads of power.
Well, I think it's fair to say that Woodward was a CIA asset. His information, no doubt, came from insiders like CIA, FBI, whoever, Russ. But he was a guy fed the information, and he transmitted it in the material he turned out in the books and whatever. And it was like Judith Miller essentially being a press agent for the Pentagon leading up to the Iraq War in 2003. She basically redistributed Pentagon press releases on the front page of the New York Times. So Woodward did it earlier to get Richard Nixon.
That's right. And so these figures, he and John Dean, and one of the things I do in Family of Secrets is I say, who was John Dean? How did John Dean get his job in the White House? And again, I look at the books, and there's nothing in there about that. They just treat it as the most normal thing in the world, that this ambitious young man got this job and this job and this job, and there he is with Richard Nixon. But Richard Nixon didn't know John Dean, didn't know him at all. And there's a fascinating path for him. We don't have the time to go into all of that detail, but you can see all of these figures, Hunt, a CIA officer, Alexander Butterfield, the man who reveals the existence of the supposedly incriminating tapes, having CIA connections. Leon Jaworski, the prosecutor who brings Nixon down, connections to the CIA. Again, never reported before, and not just that, but being a close friend of Poppy Bush. All of these people were very, very close friends. They all had ties. They had intelligence connections. A lot of them were connected back to a Barry Goldwater's campaign. It's a very interesting circle, and there's still more work to be done on that, but I like to think that Family Secrets is a good start in educating people and getting people talking about these things.
Well, Russ, it proves, again, anybody listening to this program knows that we learn over and over again that the most important things we need to know are the things that are never reported in the mainstream. So we need people like you, my goodness, to put in 5 years of research to turn out this incredible volume with all this information in it. Just imagine if we knew even snippets of other important things the same way. When we come back, it was a Watergate precursor called the Townhouse Affair. Let's take a break now, Russ.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the NewsHour. I'm with Russ Baker talking about his book, Family of Secrets. Russ, explain what the Townhouse Affair was all about.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. Steve, I was just thinking, though, it's we've now done about an hour and a half of your program.
We haven't gotten to George W. yet.
We've barely scratched the surface. The book is at least half of it about George W., right? And I'm just concerned how
about a 30-second account of Townhouse would jump into George W.?
Sure. I discovered a little-known precursor to the burglary called the Townhouse Affair, in which a group of people connected to Poppy Bush set up something where they were basically doing what appeared to be an illegal campaign finance operation on behalf of Richard Nixon. Everything about the way it was set up was it seemed designed that if it became public, it would be a scandal for Nixon. And I actually tracked down a man who was the key operative in Townhouse, spoke to him about it. He admitted to me that he had always had doubts about why he was being told to do this, because it looked like something stupid again, something that if publicized would blow up in Nixon's face. Again, Nixon didn't know about it. The whole thing was absurd. So in Family of Secrets, I've got a fairly lengthy section where I describe this kind of madcap finance operation where they deliberately put it in a basement back room in a townhouse instead of just renting a normal office. They actually weren't even doing anything illegal. It was just designed to sort of look shady. And in fact, they even did try to, somebody leaked this story to newspapers in Washington, which picked it up. It just didn't take off. And so this was one of sort of two, three, or four different things that all were different and all were experiments in how do you launch a scandal against Richard Nixon. And finally, it was the burglary and Bob Woodward and Bernstein that took off.
Oh, indeed. If one thing doesn't work, they try something else. I think the bottom line of this, Russ, is that the powers that be can make or break anybody in government. It simply doesn't matter who they are. They can take down a president as easily as you or me. They take a little more effort, a little more, be a little more clever about it. But let's jump into W. That certainly is a major, major part of the book, and we have to talk about him.
Right. I think the, for me, the most interesting thing is to realize that George W. Bush was not this buffoon the way that he was characterized, that he was a very willful individual, that from a young age he was involved with politics, with his father's campaigns. He was barely into his 20s, he was a surrogate speaker on behalf of his father. He was an advisor, an important advisor to his father throughout the years. George W. Bush himself spoke of running for office very young and launched a congressional campaign all the way back in 1978, where he almost won. And so this notion of him as this sort of hard drinking, kind of reckless guy who then was born again and became serious, it's something of a myth, and I must say it looks to be a constructed myth. So what I found was that George W. Bush was, rather than being sort of estranged from his father, he was sort of a soldier in this kind of off-the-books intelligence operation. And in Family of Secrets, I have two chapters that are mostly about companies that the public doesn't know much or perhaps anything about, that in which George W. Bush was involved as an adult. And these companies had all the earmarks some sort of an intelligence operation, because they never made any money for the outside investors. The money coming in would come in from offshore accounts, the Caribbean, people connected to South African interests, the Shah of Iran, the Philippine dictator Marcos, very strange operations. And you just look at these things and you say, what an amazing group of people coming together and then putting George W. Bush on the board, compensating him handsomely for what seemed to be no work at all, so that he could go off and be an advisor to his father's campaigns. So that's a very important theme in Family of Secrets. And then another important one is the construction of his image to make him presidential. And I've got one chapter that focuses on his celebrated religious rebirth. And I wanted to look at that just because he didn't seem to me, even when he was president, to be sort of the type of person you think of as a born-again Christian. And I began looking at that and trying to understand exactly when this transformation had taken place. And what I discovered, I was able to spend a lot of time with a man who was an advisor to the Bush family on religious matters. He was himself an ordained Pentecostal minister and also a marketing and branding expert. And he had been sending them memos telling them that if you do not embrace this particular wing of Protestantism, you will simply not get into the White House. And the memos were for Poppy Bush, but George W. Bush was advising the father, and he was reading these things. And this whole relationship with this advisor began the year before George W. Bush supposedly met a traveling minister, got down on his knees, and found Jesus.
Oh, I'm so touched. I mean, this guy does not seem like the most likely candidate to be a born again religious anything, Russ. Despite what in fact he really is, he also had problems with alcohol, with drug abuse. There's an abortion story that's not too pleasant about a girlfriend, the National Guard. I guess they didn't want any of this stuff to come out. Some did, but they managed to slough over it during the campaign. The first one especially, the second one, there were different issues. But they always need to craft an image of a candidate, and it doesn't matter what the person is or who the person is. They simply create an image of the way they want this person presented. So they do it with everybody, and it gets more sophisticated all the time. But you pick it up, Russ.
One of the, I think, key points of the second half of Family of Secrets is the way in which they manipulate the media, very relevant today because it's still pretty much the same, how they not only do that but also intimidate and destroy those who will not play ball. And so I take the Dan Rather, CBS News, National Guard memo stories to its ultimate conclusion and to show how essentially an operation was run against CBS. And what's very interesting about that is that Bush's real secret was not that he drank, and in fact, his drinking was exaggerated deliberately because, people who are born again like the redeemed sinner, and that was a constructed narrative that he had because so many Americans do drink and may have had drinking problems and so on. There's a lot of sympathy on that front. That really was not beyond the pale. What was beyond the pale was a man who launched an unnecessary war in Iraq and sent thousands of National Guardsmen into harm's way, many of whom were injured or killed, and by the way, who received very inadequate training to go over there, that he himself, a supporter of the Vietnam War, had avoided with his father's concurrence, avoided going to Vietnam, and his father was taking trips to Vietnam, fact-finding trips as a congressman at the time. The son avoided Vietnam. They put him into that safe, elitist National Guard unit. He flew a plane, and then he skipped out on the final 2 years of his service. Now, if this was ever established for a fact, which is what many in the media were seeking to figure out what could be established along with CBS News, if that had been established as a fact, frankly, he could never have been elected president. And even in 2004, he would have lost to John Kerry, who did serve in Vietnam. He would have lost for reelection. The stakes were very, very high, not just in Iraq, but the stakes for all of these corporations that had their way with George W. Bush. I mean, they were running roughshod over the entire government. The whole place was shut down. Regulatory mechanisms were not functioning. They were putting their cronies in. Go ahead, do pollute as much as you want, violate labor regulations, do it all, have a good time. He was the guy for them, and they were not about to let his military record come out. And that's the background of the story of those fake memos that looked real that were provided to CBS News.
Oh, indeed, Russ. When Bush was governor of Texas, he pretty much made it clear by his record that whatever industry wanted, industry would get under his leadership. And I did a year-end 2008 review of his 8 years in the White House. It was probably the longest article I ever wrote. In one piece, sometimes things get a little long and I divide them in pieces, but as one article, this was the longest one. And it really needed a book or two or three, because to cover 8 years, that's covering an awful lot of ground. But I began during his time as Texas governor. And I mean, he was in the streets, wet dream, plain and simple, just looking at his record during those years in Texas. So what he did in Texas, he would go to Washington and do the same things, and he did. They absolutely wanted him, and there was no way they would let any skeletons, real or otherwise, in his closet interfere with that. So they didn't.
You see, the mistake is that, I mentioned this yesterday, we look at these figures, George W. Bush, how he was different from his father, what did Jimmy Carter want to do, who was he, a peanut farmer, and so on. And, you know, all of these things are they matter to some extent, but they don't matter that much. Everything that goes on, I don't care what it is, including speeches that presidents make aimed at the world and so on, all of these things take into account a myriad of matters. And it's very, very interesting because you have these extremely powerful corporations whose interests are certainly paramount and very well expressed by their representatives in Washington, and yet we never hear about them. We almost never hear about them until there is a scandal of immense proportions, like the current economic collapse. So we don't get an accurate sense of who's behind these people, why they want them in power, why they want them out of power, why they want them to do or why they do certain things while they're in power. So we don't have a very sophisticated conversation about the shaping of events in our country's history, even on not only long term, but we don't do it on a day-to-day basis. Each day we don't hear a good discussion about why things are going the way that they are.
Oh, we never hear a good discussion, Russ. And I've written enough articles on the current global economic crisis to fill a book, just kind of covering it from different angles. So much, and I'm not done with it yet, and this thing has a long way to go. You never get a real, honest discussion, explanation. And even now, what's going on, there is so much distortion, and you get it throughout the mainstream. And if people tune in nightly to what passes for news and information on television, the major programs, you are absolutely guaranteed to be uninformed. People who listen to this program know it. But if somebody tuned into this for the first time and compared it to what they get on as a regular diet through the major TV programs, it would be like getting news and information from a different planet. You need to adjust to the truth to realize this is what really is happening, and that other stuff is just, it's what they want you to know.
That's right. I mean, you know, you see things like in the newspaper with President Obama's speech, which was really a great speech, I must say.
In Cairo?
Yeah, and in many ways he is a stirring figure. But, you know, to be objective about it, I mean, we see these pictures, you know, reaction shots of people sitting in barbershops in Cairo and so on. But, I mean, those people's opinions don't matter. And there was no discussion at all. You know, he does in one or two sentences about U.S. interests. Well, what are U.S. interests? It's oil. I mean, if he's really going to have a candid speech, he has to say, listen, you know, we are a society that consumes resources that we get from elsewhere, and we need oil from the Middle East, and that is always going to be a consideration in our policy. I mean, how refreshing would that be? How refreshing would it be if we could understand how important those real relationships are? And, you know, when we saw him, briefly sitting with the Saudi leaders, he went off to stay at the farm of the Saudi king. In Family of Secrets, I deal extensively with the Saudis and the Bushes. And another fascinating chapter that I think is poorly understood is a secret relationship between the Bush family and the Saudis going way back to the early 1970s. And you see this back channel being created where the Saudis are told, look, you can only stay in power in your country if you have the right protection, because a lot of people want to overthrow you. We can keep you in power, and in return, we want you to supply us with a uninterrupted oil supply at prices we can handle, and we want you to devote a lot of your profits to hiring large American infrastructure and engineering companies, and then to shift profits into Texas. And we see in a chapter of Family of Secrets, we see these profits coming into these interesting enterprises in Houston, all run by buddies of the Bush family. And so they're making out like bandits on this thing. And again, this is never discussed, but this is the backstory to American policy in the Middle East.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, Saudi Arabia is such an important country. We talk about petrodollars. Well, they don't talk about it in the mainstream, but you're referring to petrodollars. And we even engineered the early 1970s so-called oil crisis that quadrupled oil prices, and the deal with the Saudis, and Saudis mainly because they're the big supplier, but the other big ones too, was we'll make you very rich. We'll quadruple the price of oil. The deal is that you recycle your petrodollars to U.S. corporations, to America, to U.S. Treasury bonds, and you buy U.S. munitions. And as far as protection, Russ, the real threat to the Saudis would be, if you don't go along with this, then the country you need to fear most of all is us, because we'll get rid of you and get another regime in that will obey our orders. So getting rich and recycling petrodollars is a pretty good deal.
Yeah. And the ironic thing is that the United States has so many good qualities and so many good people and idealistic principles, and yet those things just don't seem to get the airtime. They don't seem to come into play nearly often enough.
Oh, indeed they don't. Let's take a final break, and then you wrap up with whatever we didn't cover that you think is most important. We'll be right back.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the NewsHour on Final Segment with Russ Baker. Russ, I think it's a fair statement to make that the things we most need to know are the things that never get reported. Of the ground that you covered, you certainly gave us an awful lot of what we need to know in your book. And, of course, there's so much. I think in one respect it reads like a thriller. And the tough part, it's a very, very long, detailed book. But the tough part of something that that just grabs you as you go through it is you hate to have it end, because the more of it you get, the more of it you want. Again, we're talking about Russ's book, Family of Secrets, the Bush Dynasty, the powerful forces that put it in the White House, and what their influence means for America. Russ, give you a website again, and also familyofsecrets.com.
Right. Familyofsecrets.com. We put up excerpts from some of the interviews, links, and so forth, and people can contact us via the site. Also, you said you don't want the reporting to end, and hopefully it won't end. I am going to do another book.
Wonderful.
Still mulling the parameters of it. But perhaps more importantly is our small nonprofit, www.whowhatwhy.com. WhoWhatWhy.com. This is an attempt to, with financing from ordinary people, small donations on a monthly basis, and people can go to WhoWhatWhy.com and click support it. We hope to staff up with a small staff of crack investigative reporters and to look into the kinds of stories that you and I have been discussing and to produce regular journalism, on a regular basis, so that you don't have to wait 5 years for a book, but you can get this on a monthly, weekly, even daily basis. But it's all really dependent on whether we can spread the word, get enough people to go to the site and sign up to make, modest, whatever, $20 a month or something to help us keep going. Also important is with Family of Secrets, we do need to show the publisher that their courage in publishing something like this was not misplaced. And I would like to ask your listeners, whatever they can do to spread the word, let people know about the book, if they go onto websites and blogs and so forth, certainly would be delighted if people would mention the book and let other people know about it. Family of Secrets, and we're happy to hear from folks if they've got tips, other things we ought to be looking into at familyofsecrets.com.
Oh, so important, Russ. I go along with all of that. And the work that you do, people like Robert Perry, he was on the program a few weeks ago. He's got a website, Consortium News. He does the same kind of work, a longtime investigative journalist. But we just don't have enough of you folks around.
I think what distinguishes whowhatwhy.com and what we intend to do is that we are emphatically nonpartisan. We don't write polemics. We don't take sides. What we do is we do fact-based, document-based investigative reporting. We travel. We go to interview people. We go to find people who are scared or reticent to talk. There are a lot of good websites out there, but I think if you look particularly at this genre, we're trying to set a new standard for work that's very difficult to do. It's very time-consuming. It's very labor-intensive. It takes a very expansive skill set. We want to train young journalists, bring them in, and pair them with laid-off, older, experienced investigative journalists. We have a fairly ambitious agenda here, and we're really hoping that there is enough public support out there for whowhatwhy.com to do that.
Russ, I just have time to thank you for coming on. The most important thing is cover the big issues and absolute get your facts right and tell the truth. And if you do that, you're doing the right thing. Russ, many, many thanks. This has been a great couple of hours. Keep you posted on your new book. I guess it's a ways off, but when it's out, we have to talk about it again. We'll be back on Monday. More live programming, more top guests. Please join us then.